We are holding on Kufiyut Aleph, Amud Aleph, 10 lines from the bottom, line in Tafshila. All right, so we've been talking about, our Mishnah had told us about the case where you want to eat an udder, what you have to do with it as far as tearing it open, etc. And that led us into a related discussion about the liver, where the liver also, you have to do something special with it. In particular, we said that we had the last case involving Rabbi Barav Huna and Rabbi Barav Nachman, that you have to cut open the large vein over there in order for the blood to be able to drain out while it's roasting.
On top of the liver and on the bottom of
well,
the liver?
Well, no, in other words, what you do is, as you said, what you do is you cut open that, you cut it open, you cut it chesty ve'erev, and you put the cut side down so that the blood can flow out of it.
But which vein?
Whichever vein, whichever the major vein in the liver. Yeah, I guess. The talking portal vein, but yeah. Okay. Fine. Okay, so Itmar. So now we have a discussion like this. What about if you're roasting together, what if you're roasting liver together with, together with other meat? So, Itmar, kavda ilove bisra, if you're roasting liver above other meat. So Rashi describes the ovens, the way the ovens were made in those days, is when you put meat on a spit to roast it, the spit would be going vertically down.
Okay.
So because you'd have the ovens were open at the top, as opposed to, Rashi says, our ovens that are open sideways, there's a somewhat different din. So the ovens they had in those days were open at the top.
Well, the blood used to drip down.
So therefore, that's the point. So if you have, if you put on the lower end of the spit, you put some regular meat.
Also
the Korban Pesach. And if you put the lower, okay, so if you put a regular piece of meat lower down on the spit, and then you have a liver higher up on the spit, so then, shari, then it's mutter because dama mishrak sharik, because the blood that comes out of the liver is going to slide right off, because it, when Rashi says, because when you're roasting it, it doesn't get absorbed very easily, it just slides right off. Tosfos says that, okay, maybe lachachila, it's not mutter to do lachachila, but we're talking about if it was done.
So it goes from the liver to the
other meat, and then it slides right off.
The other way around.
So that's when you have the liver above the meat. If you have other meat above the liver, then for sure it's okay, because then you have even less meat. You have even less blood coming out of it because we're talking about that you.
Any meat above the liver doesn't.
Yeah, yeah, fine. Okay. On the other hand, hello. Kachla ich ilave bistra. On the other hand, if you're going to roast a cow, an udder, above regular meat, then osur. That sort of thing would be osur. My timer, cholav saruchi misra. Because the difference is, unlike blood, which slides right off, on the other hand, milk is fatty, and therefore it gets absorbed. Okay, it sticks to the meat and gets absorbed. Milk is fatty. You know, it's got milk fat in it. So it sticks.
Do you mind leaving the door open?
So therefore it sticks, and therefore it's going to be awesome. So if you were to put the regular meat higher and the udder lower, then there would be no problem. But if it's like this, then you have a problem. Reb Dimi min ha'ja masni ikha. Reb Dimi min ha'ja learns it exactly the other way around. Kach le'ile ilovi bisra shari. A cow higher than regular meat is mutter. My time chalev shchuta derabanan, because as we've discussed in the sugya, the milk from an animal that's shechted is anyway, which in this case it is, it's milk that you found in the udder after the animal was shechted. So such milk is anyway only also derabanan. Therefore, we can be make on it. On the other hand, kavda yilove bistra. On the other hand, to roast a liver higher than other meat would be also because dam daraisa, because there you have blood coming out of it, which is also daraisa. Now, it is true, one second, we'll talk horizontal, we'll talk about it in a second. First, let's deal with the Gemara over here. Tosfos points out, it's true that after blood is cooked, then it's not also daraisa anymore, but the fact is, before when it comes out of the liver, it's not yet cooked, as opposed to milk from a shchuta is to begin with, derabanan. So that would be a reason to be machmir with liver above other meat, more so than with udder above other meat.
But wouldn't the Svara say parket?
Granted, but it might not be totally shorik. Some of it might still be absorbed. As opposed to the milk, even if some of it is absorbed, big deal. It's only also derabanan anyway. As opposed to blood, you're talking about something which in and of itself is also daraisa. what's the actual halacha?
Milk would be also the rabbanon.
Because it's chalev shchotzer. No? Dorash meremer. The milk of the shchotzer. No, it's not a rabbanon. Yeah, that's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Dorash meremer. So meremer darshin. What's the bottom line? Hilchata. The halacha is bein kavda bein kachla tusi bisra shari. Whether we're talking about liver or whether we're talking about chal, if you have it under regular meat, lower down on the spit. If it's lower down on the spit, then for sure it's mutter. Ilovi bistra, but if you roasted the liver or the chal above regular meat, the eved e machatchilaloi. With both of them, it's only mutter the eved, but it's also to do it machatchila. Because on the one hand, you have the point about with the liver, you have the point about dam coming out of it and getting absorbed and getting possibly absorbed. On the other hand, with the chal, you have the problem of milk coming out of it and possibly getting absorbed. Now Tosfos asks, If we already ripped open the cow and pressed it against the wall, et cetera, then what milk is there left? Nevertheless, Tosfos says you still have a little bit of milk leaks out of it, and it's be'ein. You can see it on the meat below it, and therefore you have an issue. Rashi says nowadays that we have ovens that open from the side, and when we put meat on a spit, it's from the side, like in a rotisserie or whatever. So then. Rashi says, then it would be also either way, because inevitably what you have is sometimes you pick up the one end of the spit versus the other, and then you have one piece is higher than the other. In the spits that they had in the times of the Gemara, which are vertical, then you always have one piece is going to be above the other. But over here, our spits that are horizontal, sometimes you're going to have one end higher, sometimes you're going to have the other end higher, therefore you could end up with a problem. And therefore, so again, but the evidence will be mutter, but l'chatchila you shouldn't do it.
What's that?
We're Kofi from Alif.
So actually, they used to do it like we do the shish kebab, you know, it's vertical.
Yeah, I got that. You do have other Rishonim who have different understandings in our Gemara over here, but whether we're talking about whether the liver was salted, whether the cow was ripped open, etc. But okay, all right. Rav Ashi ikol avei Rami bar Abba chamua. One time, Rav Ashi visited the household of Rami bar Abba, who was his father-in-law. Hazil lebreid Rami bar Abba, and then he saw Rami bar Abba's son. So therefore, this is Rav Ashi's brother-in-law. Because shofid kavda ilavi bitra, he had put regular meat lower down on the spit and liver higher up on the spit. Which we just said, Merema said you're only allowed to do that with the oven. Omar, so Rav Ashi says, Kama, you're here, Haim Rabbanon. Look how proud, look how gaivadik this Tamar Chacham is, Rami Bar Abba's son. Emud Omar Rabbanon Dieven, because he put it higher. Emud Omar Rabbanon Dieven. Granted, the Chachamim say that such a thing is allowed, but Dieven, Achila mi Omar. Did they ever say that such a thing is Mutal Achila? So how could you be doing it, Achila?
He put it
on the spit that way. That's the chachila. Okay. However, the Gemara says here is an there's no other way. You roast them separately. V'di'evit would mean if you did it, then you didn't realize. No, and when you put it on the spit to begin with, that's not v'di'evit. We're going to have actually something like that soon. We're going to talk about something soon. In connection with a plate that absorbed treifus and is broken. And has to be broken, where we don't say it's b'di'evet, we don't say that you would be allowed to use it because of noise and time with gam, because b'di'evet, because b'di'evet doesn't allow you to use it again and then say, okay, but it was b'di'evet. B'di'evet would be if you used it. Okay. Another case, though, v'i'ika be'dubi. Now, another case might be you might have a keli, you might put a bowl under the meat while it's roasting to catch the fat. Rashi describes that in his times, for example, when they roasted ducks or geese or whatever, they would do it that way. So they'd put a bowl underneath it. So then, if you do that, bistra ilavi kavda nami oser, then it'll be also what ends up in the bowl, even if you have the regular meat higher and the liver lower. Because then what happens is, then you have blood normally like this. Why is it mutter? Why is it no problem at all if the liver is on bottom? Because the blood of it just drips directly into the fire and it doesn't land on anything else. Or whatever, it falls on the bottom of the oven. But if you have a plate, if you have a bowl over there to catch it, then meanwhile all that blood is getting into the bowl, and then you're going to be eating it. So then that would be a problem.
But as long as you don't need the bowl, you
can run. No. We're talking about the fact you're putting the bowl there in order to catch the drippings from the meat, and that way afterwards you'll have the fat, you'll have the schmaltz.
Oh.
The problem is that now you have blood from the liver mixed in. So the question is, why is it any different than the rest of the blood that comes out of the meat? And if you have regular meat below, okay, it's also not necessarily did you salt it for kashering before you roasted it, because you don't need to. In fact, you have Rishonim who learned that when you're roasting, you don't need to salt the chlal.
Because it runs out.
You have Rishonim who learn that you do still need a little bit of salting, and that's that I'm all right, that's the minhag, but nevertheless, it still doesn't need to be fully salted like you do for kashering, so you also have blood coming out of it. The difference is, Dama de Bistra Shochen, Dama de Kav de Kofen. The difference is, the blood that comes out of the meat sinks to the bottom, and the fat flows above, so therefore you can just skim off the fat. On the other hand, Dama de Kav de Kofen, but the blood from the blood that comes out of the liver also floats to the top. So therefore it gets one explanation. I think that Ashba says is yes, because it's thicker, therefore it tends to stay at the top along with the fat, and therefore you're gonna have more of a problem with the fat. Later on, the Sugya, the Gemara brings a way to make sure that the blood and the fat will separate more cleanly. You put some salt at the bottom of the plate, and that tends to draw the blood to it in the same way as it does when you're kashering meat. But nevertheless, still when you have liver involved over here, that still doesn't work so well.
I missed it.
So that when you have blood that's dripping out of the liver and also fat, the problem is the fat and the blood don't separate as much in the bowl. The blood gets mixed in with the fat, therefore the fat's going to be also as well. As opposed to if you're talking regular meat, then the blood of that tends to sink to the bottom and the fat stays on top, and therefore you can skim it off easily.
And the salt?
The salt helps to draw the blood more to the bottom.
So the fat of the regular meat stays on top,
and the blood goes to the bottom, whereas the liver, the blood of it also stays on the top. The Shach mentions in Shulchan Aruch, by the way, that once the meat is half roasted, then you are allowed to put a bowl underneath to catch the drippings, because then at that point there's really no blood left in it. Well, it drips because the Gemara calls it later chamar basa. The Gemara calls it later. It's like wine of meat. It's like the red stuff that comes out of the meat. But at that point, it's not considered blood anymore. Yeah. Actually, when I was learning smicha, one of my Rosh Yeshiva had an expression it may look like blood, it may taste like blood, it may chemically be blood, but lahalacha, it's not blood. Because already this is after melicha or after tzliya or whatever the case may be, and therefore you don't have to worry about it. The fact of the matter is, as we said before, anyway, once blood is cooked, it's not also daraisa. Once it's salted, it's also not also daraisa. So there comes a point after it's been salted and after it's been roasted, as the case may be, there comes a point when we don't have to consider it blood anymore and then be machmir about it.
So the blood that you find in chicken after it's salted is not really blood?
Usually it's not, but if you find a blood clot over there, that's different. They're supposed to cut that open because a blood clot won't be taken care of by the liver. Right, but it's not a blood clot. Then generally it's not a problem.
If you find a blood clot,
if you find a blood clot after the salting, then it means that they didn't do a good job. It means they didn't cut open that clot like they were supposed to before salting it.
You don't eat that area.
Okay. Onward. Omer of Nachman Omer Shmuel Sakin Sheshokapa. Okay, so here basically we're finished with the matter of chal. Now we're going to get on to other topics of iser v'heter, other topics involving blood and other absorptions and whatever, and getting and back to basa b'chalav eventually. So Rashi takes the time to summarize over here briefly that as far as the bottom line is, therefore, as far as the liver, we're saying that you have to roast it because salting is not going to be enough. Tosfos earlier learns that maybe if you salt it is enough like any other meat, but most Rishonim disagree with that. You just have to cut it. But most Rishonim learn that you actually have to roast it. But salting by itself is not sufficient to get the blood out of it. You salt it a little bit like you do for roasting, but you don't need to. Yeah. As far as the Rashi summarizes over here, as far as the cow, we said that you have to tear it open, shesi ve'ediv, if you're going to roast it. If not, then according to Rav's first lashon, it was mutter. We have a braisa that said according to him, so therefore it's mutter. As if you're going to cook it in a pot, then you need to cut it shesi ve'ediv and bang it again and press it against the wall. And again, you have other Rishonim who learn differently than Rashi as far as the various details of that. You have some Rishonim who learn that it is mutter for roasting even without. The Rif, for example, says it's mutter for roasting even without tearing it open, like we have the story of Reb Nachman and Yalta. Chalazi is the udder. With the milk. Yeah. Okay, so now Omer Reb Nachman Omer Shmuel, Sakin Sheshachatba, a knife that you shechted with. Now, the problem is, when you shecht an animal, the area of the neck that you cut is fairly hot. Therefore, the knife absorbs a certain amount of blood. So now, therefore, also lachtech boreseach. The knife absorbs blood, yeah. Therefore, also lachtech boreseach. Therefore, you're not allowed to cut hot. Therefore, you're not allowed to cut hot food with it because the blood that it absorbed will go back out into that food. So then, what about if you want to cut cold food with it? So one version is that it requires washing. And another version is that it does not require washing before you cut. Now Rashi learns that what we're talking about over here, when we say it requires cutting, we mean the cold food. In other words, Rashi would learn that we're talking about if you didn't clean the knife and you cut cold food with it, all you need to do afterwards, according to the one opinion, is rinse off the cold food, and according to the other opinion, you don't even need to do that. Many other Rishonim learn that we're saying boyer or loy boyer hadacha is referring to the knife. That if you want to cut other food with the knife, even if that food is going to be cold, you have to, according to one opinion, you have to first rinse off the knife. According to the other opinion, or wipe it off. The Rishonim say the shchita knife we're talking about, or wipe it off. They say it could also work. And the other opinion in all Gemara says that it doesn't even require that. You can cut cold food with it as is. The halacha is it does require hadacha, and the halacha is like most of the other Rishonim who say that it means the knife itself requires hadacha, requires rinsing or wiping off before you cut cold food with it. And as far as hot food with it, you would need more than that, because even though actually Rishonim point out, unlike Rashi over here who says that the beis hashchita is reseach, most of the other Rishonim learn that the beis hashchita, the place of the neck that you shecht, is actually not considered so hot. And in fact, when we talk about the definition of Yad Sevadisbay, one of the points that the Achronim bring who discuss how much that is, Yossi, please leave that. Okay. You have Achronim in the last generation or two who discussed, you know, once the temperature scales, we have to figure out, you know, how much is Yad Sevadisbay in Fahrenheit or in Celsius. One of the things they bring to bear in that connection is that earlier in our Masechta, the Gemara in the first parak, the Gemara says that the Beis HaShchita is considered soyin. So therefore, evidently, the idea is that whatever Yad Sevadisbay is, it's higher than the temperature of an animal's neck at the time of Shchita. That's what we have to figure out. Okay, what do you mean, how could it be the same? That's fine, but nevertheless, Yad Siladisbah is how long do you want to keep your hand there or whatever. Anyway, the point is that Rashi, again, is using the expression of Beis HaShchita Reseach. However, many Rishonim point out on the basis of what it says in the first parak that Reseach over here maybe Rashi means as a relative term. In absolute terms in Halacha, it's actually considered Soinin. So in principle, then the knife doesn't really absorb that much from it. The problem is a concept called duchka de sakina, that's the pressure of the knife when you're cutting something else with it, causes anything that it did absorb, even though there wasn't any heat involved, does cause it to exude out into the next food. And that's why we're saying that if you're going to be cutting hot food with it, then you need to kasher it first. And if you cut cold food with it, then we're saying all you need to do is rinse it.
You don't do duchka if you press, then the shchita is possible.
You have to go back and forth.
No,
but the duchka de sakina we're talking about when you're cutting the next thing, when you're cutting a vegetable, or you're cutting then you press
so
the knife.
One second, that's only for shchita. Let's say you slice with a knife some hot sausage, and then you use it for...
So if the knife is balua from Isur, for example, things that are also to eat, like trefus, then you have different issues over there. Here we're talking about shritten. So if it actually absorbed trefus, that's a different matter.
But something that's not trefus, kosher, but warm or hot meat, you don't have to rinse it afterwards?
No, so that if you want to use it for milk, yeah, you do.
Not for milk, if you want to use it for something.
If you want to use it for vegetables, so then that's what we're going to discuss soon. We're going to see soon. We're going to discuss that in the Gemara, to what extent do those vegetables absorb, and therefore what's the gene as far as having them with milk. We'll get to that soon. Wait.
And what you said about using it for milk, it would be allowable if you wipe the knife?
I didn't quite say that. No, if you use it to cut hot meat and you want to afterwards use it for milk, no, you would need to kasher it. Yeah.
Okay,
so let's go on. Okay, so those are the dinim as far as a shchita knife. So again, if you can't cut hot food with it, although the Rambam says b'di'evit, if you did, then the food is not aser. If you want to cut cold food with it, then according to Rashi, you don't need to do anything. Just afterwards, according to one opinion in the Gemara, you would have to rinse off the food. And according to everybody else, we're saying you would have to rinse off the knife before you use it to cut anything. Okay. Another din, Amr of Yehuda Amashmol, Ka'ara Shemalach Babasar, a plate in which you salted meat to kasher it. Also lechol barei seach. You afterwards not allowed to use that plate to eat hot food in it, because it will absorb from the food will absorb the blood that the plate absorbed previously from the melicha. If you salted meat to kasher it in a plate, so afterwards you're not allowed to use that plate for other hot food. No, even if you rinse it. Shmuel the time, Shmuel goes according to his svara, to Amar Shmuel, because Shmuel says elsewhere, we're going to have a few times in our Sylvia, Moliach Hareo Kareseach, Kavush Hareo Kamabushel. Something salted, when it's salted heavily, like this, like you do for kashering, then it's considered like boiling, and Kavush, when something is soaked or pickled, then it's the equivalent of being cooked. So in other words, the same way as a plate would absorb from hot food that you place on it, so the same way, here it'll absorb blood from the meat that you kashered on it. And therefore, now it'll exude it into the next food that you eat on that plate, the next hot food that you eat on that plate. Therefore, you can't do that.
So what do you do then?
You can't eat hot food on that plate again. We'll see in a second. He also, Robin, Amar Rav Yechanan, however, when Robin came from Eretz Yisrael, he said in the name of Rav Yechanan, no, Moliach Enei Kereseach, Bekavosh Enei Kemevoshel. No, something salted, even if it's heavily salted, does not have the din like something boiling, and something that's pickled does not have the din of something that's cooked. So it doesn't absorb to that extent. However, Amar Abaya, Hadar Ravin Lester. However, Abaya says, what Ravin says is not correct. It's not correct to say that Rabbi Yechanan is makel like that. How do we know? Dahi pincha dahavi beirav ami, because there was this plate that was made out of earthenware you can't kasher, that was in Rabbi Ami's household, the molach be bisra, where one time they salted meat in it, the tavrei, and Rav Ami broke the plate. Now, why would he have had to break it? Mechti Rav Ami Talmud Rav Yechanan Haba. Now, Rav Ami is a Talmud of Rav Yechanan, so he would follow what his Rebbe holds. My time of tavrei, why would he have broken it? Lav mishum d'shmi le'mineid Rav Yechanan d'amam aliyach harayu kareseach. Must be because he heard from Rav Yechanan the same as Shmuel's did. That meat, that when food is heavily salted, it's considered like it's boiling, therefore the plate absorbs the meat. Therefore, the plate absorbed blood, and therefore, that's it. Then you can't. So now, in principle, one possibility, the Rishonim point out, why did Rav Ami have to break it? Why didn't he keep it around? First of all, we could argue that all he has to do maybe is keep it for 24 hours. Then anything that it absorbed is nice and timeless gam. And then afterwards, you should be able to use it for other food. The answer is, and here's where we come into L'Chila versus B'di'evet, this concept that Nois and Tam L'Chgam is Mutter is only B'di'evet. So to use it L'Chila, to say that we're going to use it, that's not B'di'evet. That would be L'Chila, and you can't do that. The other possibility is, I think the Ran talks about, why didn't he keep it around to use it for cold food? And the reason is, because if you keep it around intending to use it only for cold food, you may forget and end up using it for hot food as well. Right. So therefore, he broke it.
And what happens if they use it for the same purpose, only one purpose of soaking?
If they're using it only for salting meat, then fine. But in this case, it was a regular plate. It wasn't distinguishable from any other plate. Yeah, if they had to begin with, it was usually when you salt meat to kasher it, you do it on something that has holes so the blood can drain out. So in this case, I guess conceivably, if they could have punched holes in the plate, then yeah, they could have kept it around as a kashering plate. But how do you punch holes in earthenware without breaking?
No.
The point is it was salted. It was heavily salted. Heavily salted. Therefore, it absorbs
the
blood. The Cairo itself. That's the point. It was cold. Yeah. But nevertheless, the fact that it was heavily salted means that it absorbed blood from the meat. Now, if you were to have hot food in that plate, then the blood would exude into the food. Therefore, it's also.
Now, that calls for any keli?
Well, any kol is true for any keli, except that other keli you could kasher. If this keli had been made out of metal or what have you, they could have kashered it, but because it's earthenware, then they don't have that option. You have a couple of the mefarshim say that maybe if it was an expensive plate, then maybe you could say hefse merubah, then maybe you would have reason to say that you could keep it around, and if they end up using it, then it's a bidiyah, the ticket thing. But like this, if it was a cheap earthenware plate, so you don't even have that yet. I think that Rabbah says that. Okay. Okay, so the point is that Abaya says, based on the story, you can see that Robin's not correct in saying that Rabbi Yechon is Mekel on this concept of Moliyah Harei Ukaritei.
Okay.
Okay. Another case, Yosef... Well, since we said that Shmuel said it, and since we said that Shmuel and Rabbi Yechon both say it, yeah, the halacha has to be like it. So, more on this topic, Yosef Rav Kahana Achur de Rav Yehuda Tamei de Ravuna. Rav Kahana, the brother of Rav Yehuda, was sitting in front of Rav Huna, the Yosef Akama. He sat and said a din as follows. And by the way, this that we have throughout Shas, this expression, Yosef twice, Mephoshim explained that what it is he would be sitting as a Talmud, he would stand up to ask permission to ask a question, and then having gotten permission from the Rosh Hashiva, then he would sit down and ask his question or state his piece or whatever. That's why the double you see. Okay. So, the Yosef Akama, so he sat and said a din as follows. Ta'ara Shemolach Babosar, a plate, as we just said, a plate that you salted meat in it to kasher it. Also, lechol boreseach, you're not allowed afterwards to eat hot food in it because it'll absorb the blood. Utsnoin shechoshe besakin. On the other hand, if you have a radish, which a radish is a sharp vegetable, if you cut it with a fleshik knife, mutul la'ochle b'kutach, you're allowed to afterwards eat that radish with kutach, which is a dip made using milk, which is milk. Meaning, so Rashi explains, we're talking about the knife itself is not even clean. The knife has grease. The knife has grease, has hardened grease on it. Nevertheless, you're allowed to because you would be allowed to eat that radish with kutach because as we're going to say why. My timer. Because the difference is, in the case of the knife, what did the radish absorb? It absorbed something which intrinsically is mutter. Fat for meat is mutter. Not chaylev we're talking about. We're talking about regular fat. That's shuman. That's mutter. So therefore, what it absorbed is something that's mutter. Afterwards, you're talking about, are you allowed to eat it with milk? That's another matter. As opposed to the plate absorbed something that intrinsically is also. Blood is intrinsically also. Therefore, no good. Amalei Rava, however, Rava says that's not a good reason to distinguish between the two of them. Soif, after all, Kibola Hatera Maihavi. So what if the radish was absorbed something which at the time is mutter? Soif, after all, said and done, Hai Hatera Dalsi Lidei Isuru. After all, it's a heter which eventually is going to result in an Isur, because when you take that radish and dip it in Kutach, then at that point you've got milk and meat together. At that point, he's going to be eating an issue because you have fleshik that you have fleshik that it absorbed, and now you have milk that you're going to eat it with. Ella Omer Rava, so Rava says no, but there's a different reason why to distinguish. Hi Epshal Mitameh, v'Hai Lo Epshal Mitameh. The difference is in the case of the radish, it's not necessarily we're saying that you can't eat it with kutach, that you could or couldn't eat it with kutach. Taste it first. A yid, after all, can taste it. The fact that it may have absorbed is fat of heter, so you can have a yid taste the radish, see if there's a taste of meat in it. If there is, then yeah, you can't have it with kutach, because then it has a taste of meat in it. And on the other hand, if a yid tastes it and finds that there's no taste of meat in it, then you would be allowed to have it with kutach. So it's not necessarily, in other words, when we're saying that if you cut the radish with a knife, then you're not allowed. Then you're allowed to eat it with kutach. Rather, saying it's not necessarily a given that you can eat it with kutach. You might be able to eat it with kutach. as opposed to the high extra, as opposed to when you have a plate that absorbs blood and now you have a hot food in it, you can't taste it because it would be also because it's also to taste because it might have absorbed blood.
So the rationale why you may eat it with meat eats a kutach with it?
Why is because first you can taste it and see. If it doesn't taste of meat, then you'll be able to eat it with kutach.
So you should apply that to anything that doesn't taste.
We learned before that in general, certain things are only also if they're nice and tam.
Right.
Now over here, you have an option. Before you have a question whether there's an iser, you're able to find out. You can have a yid taste it and see whether there's an iser in it, whether there's something that's going to result in an iser, namely a taste of that. And if there isn't, then you're good.
Mm-hmm.
Mind you, actually, the Shach actually learns on this in Shulchan Aruch. He says, nevertheless, maybe it's not l'chachila you're allowed to eat with kutach. Maybe it's only, but yeah, but, yeah. But the most...
Especially, you know, you wipe off
a test. And you're right. Right, well, maybe, but okay, the pre-chadosh and mekor, because after all, the loshen, the shulchan aruch, is you're allowed to eat it with kutach, which sounds like a means of achila. So, okay, anyway. Okay. Omelet a papa the rubber, so a papa asks the rubber, so what? In the case of the plate and then the hot food in it also, you have a way of finding out whether you're allowed to use that plate with hot food. The list that makes fela amah. Have a goyish chef taste the food and see if it tastes the blood. Isn't it like what we learned in a braisa, which we discussed before? Kedera shabishal babasol leyavashal bachalav, a pot that you cooked meat in it, you're not allowed to cook milk in it afterwards. The imbishal benoisin tam, if you did cook milk in it, then you have to see whether it gave a flavor, and if it did, then the milk is going to be also. Similarly, if you use the pot to cook truma, you're not allowed afterwards to cook cholin in it because then the cholin will be also to reserve. The imbishal, and if you did, again, benois and tam, then also you have to see whether you ask somebody to take it. The amrinan, and we said over there in the sugya, in the previous perek, the shlema truma toim matoy, and I can understand how it would work with truma, ask the koyin to taste it and see if it tastes of the original substance of truma. We're talking about min b'sheni mina, let's remember. That first you cooked in it a certain thing of truma, and later on you cook the exact same thing of cholin, obviously you don't have benois and tam. But we're talking about, let's say, first you cook in it one type of vegetable of truma, and then a different type of vegetable of cholin. So you can ask the koyin to taste it. El bosa b'chol of mantoyim lo. But in the first case, where you cooked milk, meat in it, and then afterwards you cooked milk, who are you supposed to have taste it? V'omalon, v'amritlon, rather, and you, Rapapa, yourself told, you, Rava, yourself told us, l'tamek feila, that you have a goyish chef taste it. Hochinami l'tamek feila. So over here, why are you saying that it's a given that once you salted meat to kasher it in this place, then automatically you can't eat hot food in it? If you put hot food in it, ask the goy to taste it and see if it tastes of see if it tastes blood of what? Trela actually means a goy, which actually means a chef. And when we talk about Isurim, then we mean a goyish chef because I'm
supposed to be a chef.
A person who is known to be an expert cook. I mean, it doesn't mean that he has to be a 5-star Michelin guide chef or whatever. It just means somebody who we know, who knows the taste of food. With that said, by the way, since you mentioned it, so we've talked before in the previous paragraph when we learned about the sugya, that the Rama says we're not knowing to be soymach on that, and that's the minhag of Ashkenazim. We don't hold being soymach on the tasting of a goy. We go strictly based on whether there's bitul b'shishim or not. Okay. Anyway, so the question is, so again, when it comes to the radish, you're telling me you can have a yid taste it. So why, when it comes to the hot food and the plate, can you not have a goy taste it, the same thing? And then why are you distinguishing and saying the hot food and the plate is necessarily going to be osur, whereas the radish may be osur or maybe not? And the answer is hochinami. And Rava says, you're right, that is true. However, kikamina, but like a trailer. However, I'm talking about a case where there's no goyish chef available. Therefore, in the case of the plate, you have no choice. You have to consider the food in it also because of the suffix. In the case of the radish, you're not stuck because you can always have a yid taste it.
That's what Rashi says?
That's what the Gemara means. Kikamina, Rashi says, to also like Habaritea. When am I saying you're not allowed to eat hot food in that plate? Ever again, but like a kvela, if there's no kvela available to taste it. But if there's a kvela, then you're right. The first time you have a hot food in that plate, you could ask him to taste it, and if it doesn't taste of blood, then you know you're able to use it in the future.
And in between, actually, you could rinse the plate also.
Well, that's also true, but rinsing wouldn't help to take out the flavor that it absorbs.
Right, hot water.
No, you'd need to kasher it, and if we're talking about earthenware, it can't be kasher. Yeah. Okay.
So even after rinsing it and this and that, you still might have a taste.
That has got absorbed in it, and that's going to exude out into the food. Yeah, that's the whole basis of the concept of kashering is all based on that concept. Yeah. Okay. Fine. Okay. So now we have a discussion like this. Dogim sha'alu b'kara. If you have fish that were taken off the grill after they were roasted, and they were still hot, and then you put them in a flacious plate. So, roasted fish that were hot and were placed on a flacious plate while they were hot.
Flacious meaning?
Meaning that plate that was previously used for eating meat.
But it's clean.
That may be, but the question is, did it absorb meat flavor from the plate? And now, therefore, would you be allowed to eat that fish with milk? Rav Amar Osel Ochlan B'Kutach. Rav says you're not allowed to eat such fish with kutach, which again is a dip made out of
milk.
Yeah, what's the difference? Okay, the truth is you're right. Now that you mention it, it's true. If the plate was not ben yoymo, then there's more ability to be lenient because then the taste is nice and tam with gam. That's true. So here we're talking about to keep things simple. We're talking about that the plate was used for flacious within the last 24 hours. So definitely absorb the taste of meat. The question is, that taste that goes into the fish, is it now enough to ask for that fish to be eaten with milk? Rav says yes. Shmuel says no, you would be allowed to eat that fish with kutach. One second. Rav Amar also because nois and tam, because Rav says, after all, you have a flavor over here. The fact of the matter is they absorbed the flavor from meat, and now they have meat flavor in them, and therefore you can't eat it with milk. Or Shmuel Amar Mutter because nois and tam bar nois and tam. Shmuel says it's not a primary tam. If they were cooked with meat, then of course. Or if you were to put hot milk into this plate, sure. But like this, you have the taste is going from the plate into the fish, and then from the fish into the milk. That there's no concern. Such a thing is called nos and tam by nos and tam, or in halacha terminology, they call it for short nat by nat.
From the plate to the fish,
and then from the fish to the milk, and that already is not a problem. Nat by nat is mutter,
okay. According
to Shmuel. Now,
not both together,
obviously. Now, with that said, by the way, Rishonim, among others, the Ran explained, and this is brought by Halacha and Shulchan Aruch, this concept of not by not being mutter only works by Basa B'Cholov. Because after all, when you get down to it, one major difference between Basa B'Cholov and almost every other Isser is Basa by itself is mutter, Cholov by itself is mutter. It's only the combination that's also. As opposed to, for example, if we're talking about not by not involving some other Isser, if you had, let's say, for example, fish, that was placed on a trefa plate that absorbed trefas, and now you want to eat it, and now the question is, that fish is mixed in, let's say, with other food, then or touches other food in such a way that other food absorbs from it, let's say, then you would have an issue.
Yeah.
Only when you're talking about Basa B'Cholov, then you have the heter of not by not, but not otherwise. Okay. Behold Rav, and actually the Gemara says this statement of Rav, that he's saying that it's also, that the fish are also because nois and tam, lav befeirush itma. Rav actually didn't say this in so many words. Ela miklola itma. Rather, we deduce it from a case involving Rav. Did Rav ikul abe Rav Shimi bar Chiya barbre? Because one time Rav visited the house of Rav Shimi bar Chiya, who was his grandson. Chosh ve'enav. Rav had an eye ache. Had an eye infection or something. Therefore, obdele shayafa b'tzah, so they prepared for him a salve for his eyes, so a cream. Shayafa means a cream or a salve or something to rub on his, some kind of ointment to rub on his eyes. B'tzah, and they prepared it for him in a plate. Basahachi, later on, romule b'shula b'gaba, later on, they served him some cooked food in that same plate. Toim le time of the shayafa. And he could taste the taste of the ointment in the food. Omar, so Rav says, look at that, Yoy Chaim Akule Hai. Look at the it gave so much of a flavor that the like this there's so much taste from that ointment absorbed into the plate that now it exudes back into the top shell that you're serving in the plate. So they assumed, based on that, we know that even Sichas Cholin or Tamei Chachamim you need to learn from. So even Rav is just saying, on the face of it, he's just saying that this has an old case. But when you have Rav saying that, we can actually learn a halacha from it. So we can see, apparently, he holds that not by not is an issue. Because that's what you have over here is not far enough from the linger. The answer is v'loyhi. That's why the Gemara points out that it's only mikvala because it's not a correct inference. Shiny hosam the nafish meroras fei. It's different in the case of that ointment. It's different in the case of that ointment because it's very bitter, and therefore, yes, the taste is much more long-lasting. And
he holds it not
bar nafsh. So far, we haven't shown that Rav actually holds that not bar nafsh is also. From this particular story,
no proof.
However, we have another case. Rabbi Lazar have a koyim tamei de mar Shmuel. Rabbi Lazar was one time standing as a Talmud in front of Shmuel. Aisul tamei dogim sha'ochol b'kara. They served to Shmuel fish like this that had been taken off the grill while they were hot and put on a fleshed plate. The ka'ochel b'kutach, and Shmuel was eating from it with kutach, because he just said before, you're allowed to, because it's not by now. However, yohiv leiv loy ochel. Then he offered some to Rabbi Lazar, and Rabbi Lazar didn't want to eat from it, because he held, it's awesome. Amalei, so Shmuel tells him, I don't understand. But Rabach Yehivilei Ba'ochal, I gave some of this to your Rebbe, and he ate from it. But one second, Ba'achle Achle, and you don't want to eat. Who is your Rebbe? Rashi says we're talking about Rav. So Shmuel is saying I served it to Rav. Also came to Rav. So later on, Rabbi Lazar came to Rav. Amalei, and he asked him, Hoder Meimah Mishmaite. Did you Rebbe change your mind? Even if we don't have a proof from the case involving the ointment that Rav holds that not by Nasa's author, nevertheless, as Tosfos says, Rav Elazar knew for a fact that Rav holds not by Nasa's author in the case of Basa B'Cholav. So how could it be that you changed? Did you change your mind that Shmuel is saying that he served you such a thing? Amalei, and Rav says absolutely not. Chasle Lazari the Abba Bar Abba Chasle Shalom, the son of Abba Bar Abba, who is Avur de Shmuel, Shmuel's father, who was known to be a great chassid, that Chasle Shalom, that his son Delispi Limidi Veloy Svirali, that he would serve me something that I don't hold as mutter. In other words, Rashi says Loihoyu Dvorim Ma'olam, it never happened that Shmuel served me then. So then the question is, how is Shmuel saying that he served it to him? So the Ritva explains, and also on the side of it here, it references a sefer called Be'er Sheva that give a couple of explanations. First of all, the Rebbe, Rashi is saying that the Rebbe that Shmuel is talking about is not necessarily Rav. Rebbe Lazar may have learned by more than one person. So therefore, Shmuel was saying, I served it to your Rebbe. And Rebbe Lazar thought he meant Rav, and therefore went and asked him. And Rav tells him it wasn't me. In other words, the implication is it must have been somebody else. The other possibility, the Ritva says, is maybe Shmuel is saying it like as a figure of speech, as an exaggeration. No, I never actually served this to Rav because he was never here for me to offer it to him. But if he were to visit my house, I would overpower him with halacha so much. I would work so hard to convince him that not by Nachal Mutter that he would eventually give in and eat from it.
That's
no, that the Ritva explains it that way, and therefore, so Rabbi Lazar thinks that means that Rav actually ate it, and he asked him, and then Rav tells him, no, Shmuel didn't mean that he actually served it to me. He feels that so secure in his position that he feels he would be able to convince me to. But I myself hold that not by natural justice.
Wow.
Here's another case. So far we know that Rav holds that not by natural justice. Shmuel holds his mother. So wait. Okay, so here's another case. Rav Huna and Rav Chia bar Ashi havu yasli. Rav Huna and Rav Chia bar Ashi one time were both sitting. Chad b'hai gisa de mabra de sura. One was sitting on one end of the bridge or the ferry of sura. There was a river over there in sura, and so one was sitting on one end of the bridge. V'chad b'hai gisa de mabra, and the other one was sitting at the other end of the bridge. Lamar Isolay Dogim Sha'ochal Bakar of Ochal. One of them they brought fish like this that were roasted and then immediately put on a fleshik on a fleshik plate. And v'ochal b'kutach, and they roasted the fish, then while they were still hot, they took them and put them on a fleshik plate. V'ochal, and v'ochal b'kutach, and he ate them with kutach, which is like what Shmuel says. Lamar, and to the other one who was sitting on the other end of the bridge, isolate to Ein Van Novim, Masei Chasuda, they brought him in the middle of a meal where he had washed and had bread. In the middle, they brought him figs and grapes. Now, figs and grapes are called dvorim shaloy, that are dvorim aborim la'acha asoda. Usually, you don't eat figs and grapes are not the kind of things that you eat as something to accompany bread, as part of a meal. They're something you eat for dessert. Yeah. So therefore, va'achal v'loy barich. So he ate them without making a bracha before them. Without making a bracha before the grapes and the figs. What? No. This is he had washed and he had had bread, and then in the middle of the meal he was having these grapes and these that's what meant. Mar omalei l'chavrei. So these two amaroyim, Rav Huna and Rav Chiya bar Ashi, each one of them disagreed with what the other one was doing. Mar omalei l'chavrei. One of them says to the other one, calls across to the other one, Yasna. Yasma literally means yosaim, it means an orphan. Rashi translates, bloy das, you don't have any das, you're not thinking. Yeah. Ovad Rabba Chochi, did your Rebbe do like that? To eat these dogim sha'ola bakara together with milchiks? Umar omalei l'chavre, and the other one says back to the other one also, Yasma Ovad Rabba Chochi, did your Rebbe do like that? To eat grapes and figs in the middle of the meal without making a separate bracha on them? And each one was able to justify himself. Mar omalei l'chavre. So the first one says to the other one, as far as the fish and the kutach, anoka shmuel clearly, I hold like shmuel, that is mutter, that nach bar nach is mutter.
That means exactly what?
Nois and tam bar nois and tam. It means that the fish absorbed the flavor from the plate. Or actually what it is you have, the plate itself absorbed a flavor from the meat that was previously eaten on it, which in turn goes into the fish. And now you're talking about, is that tam that's in the fish enough to be a problem to eat it with milk? So Shmuel is saying that, no, that's the point. You have I said it wrongly before. It's a taste that goes from the meat to the plate and then from the plate to the fish.
From the meat
that you previously ate on your plate. I originally said from the plate to the fish and then from the fish to the milk. But no, we're talking about voyeur. From the meat that was previously eaten on the plate. And then from the plate to the fish. That's not by now. Umar omalei l'chavre, and the other one says, why am I eating the grapes and figs without making a bracha before them? Anok Rav Chiya, really, because I hold like Rav Chiya, the Tani Rav Chiya, as in fact Rav Chiya taught a brighter, pas pateres komine maichol, when you make a bracha on bread at the beginning of the meal, it pasters all the foods you'll eat during the meal, the yayin poter komine mashkin, and wine, and the bracha on wine at the beginning pasters all the drinks that you'll drink during the meal. Now the halacha is actually not completely like that. The halacha is basically like that. However, there is that difference between dvorim aborim machmas asuda and dvorim that are not borim machmas asuda. You actually have a machloikas between Rashi and Tosfos and the sugi over there in Brachos, and it ends up being a bit of a complicated thing. But in Shulchan Aruch, it paskins that when you have things like figs and grapes that are not eaten as part of a suda normally, if you eat them in the middle of the meal, unless you eat them actually with bread, yes, you have to make a separate bracha on them. So he held like Rav Chiya, but the actual final halacha is not like that.
The reason that whatever gives in Shulchan Aruch is because foods are generally eaten independent of a meal.
That's the point, right? That's the point.
Mashkin are always because of a result of thirst from eating, and eating is connected with the bread.
Okay.
But today, many times, we eat cups of foods as a dessert.
But that's just a dessert. It's not boring machmas asuda. It's not something that's... Rashi uses the expression over here, which is basically what you're saying. The Alter Rebbe says, loy osu lo lifton. Fruit does not come as a lifton. It's not an accompaniment to bread. It's a separate thing.
So therefore, you make
a separate bracha on them. So if you're in the middle of a meal and you're eating grapes or what have you in the middle of the meal, yes, you would make a separate bracha. You don't need to make a separate after bracha on them. They're all covered by benching. But yeah. Okay. So Chizkiya says in the name of Abaya, what's the bottom line halacha as far as this din about nach bar nach? Dogim sha'ola bakara, these fish that were served in a fleshic plate while they were hot, mutar la'ochlan b'kutach, you are indeed allowed to eat them with kutach, like Shmuel says, because nach bar nach is mutar. Snoin shechoscha b'sakin shechosach b'basar. On the other hand, we were talking before about a radish that you cut using a fleshic knife. So before, actually, we were talking about before we talked about before we mentioned over here we started the sugya by talking about a knife that was used for shchita, and we mentioned in that connection a radish. But then we talked about instead a knife that was fleshik, that where Rashi said it even had grease still congealed on it. By the way, many other Rishonim disagree with that. They say even if there's no actual grease on the outside of it, there's still, again, there's grease that it absorbed, and again, duchka de sakine is going to cause it to come out into whatever you cut. So a radish that you cut with a knife, which previously you cut meat with it, also the oichel of the kurtach, that radish you would not be allowed to eat with kurtach. Because that's not not by not. Then you have the knife itself has actual mamoshos of meat, according to Rashi, or duchka de sakina, according to everybody else, which causes it to come out into the radish and give it a flavor. Yeah.
So the fish
will be mutter to eat with kurtach. But the radish that you cut with a knife, with cutting, in other words, is different than cutting is different. Cutting
and placing,
then just putting it on a plate, right? Yeah.
So you would not be allowed the knives.
What happened to this knife?
What do you mean? What happened? You used it previously to cut flesh. It's not yet. It's still ben yom. Yeah. Hot meat, Taka, because if it's cold, well, if it's cold meat, according to Rashi, that there's grease on it, then you still have, you have mamoshes vein, that's one thing. According to everybody else, that it absorbs, not necessarily does it absorb if the meat is cold.
So you have to rinse it and then you can use it?
Yeah. So,
If
it's hot, then you have a different issue, because then it absorbs more, right? By the way, Tosfos mentions in this connection over here, Tosfos brings a case that this whole thing that we said, that fish that was in the fleshic plate that you're allowed to eat with kurtach, Tosfos brings from Rashi that would only be if you put it in the plate after they were cooked. But if they were actually cooked in a fleshic pot, then he says you would not be allowed to eat them with milk. And he says vice versa. He gives an example that the Rivon brings in the name of Rashi, that you had eggs that were cooked in a milk pot, and they said you can't use them as stuffing for meat, because they were actually cooked in a fleshic pot, as opposed to here we're just talking about hot fish that was placed in a plate.
The fish was warm.
No, there was, again, there's a difference between putting hot food on a cold plate, where it doesn't really absorb very much from the plate, versus when you cooked it in a milk pot. Where then it absorbs more. Okay, Tosfos themselves doesn't necessarily agree with that concept, but it is brought in Shulchan Aruch. But if you have food that was actually cooked in a milchik pot, then you can't. I think there's a distinction that's made in Shulchan Aruch whether you cooked it and they're planning to eat it with the other kind, or whether we're talking about you cooked it in there and afterwards it happens that you want to eat it with the other kind. Where then you can be maisel on that, I think. Although the Ramah says you shouldn't, but yeah. Okay.
So any time, according to the Ramah, it was cooked.
So if you have something was cooked in one type of inflation, then you can't eat it with milk. Right. Yeah. Okay. So the Gemara says v'hani mi tznoi. Now that's only talking about if we're talking about a radish. The agav chorfei bala, because a radish is sharp, therefore it absorbs the fattiness and the fleshy taste from the knife. Avo kishus, but if you're talking about if instead you cut a cucumber with this knife, goru lebe paske, then all you have to do is scrape off the place where you cut it. But ochel, and then you're allowed to eat it with milchik, because Rashi says, again, Rashi was talking about over here that you're talking about the knife has actual fat and grease on it. Because a cucumber is a sweeter vegetable, so it doesn't really absorb. So all it is you just have some fat left on the surface of it. So all you have to do is scrape off that area that has the fat on it, and then you're good.
Again, these two cases.
The two cases are if you had a radish, which is a sharp vegetable, versus a cucumber, which is not. So a radish, if you cut it with a fleshic knife, you'd be also to eat it with milk.
It's considered hot, basically.
In a certain sense, I mean, not totally, but But the point is, it absorbs because it's sharp.
A cucumber is not sharp.
Tosfos says the same thing would apply also to various other kinds of sharp vegetables. Tosfos gives examples: garlic, leeks, onions, all those things. Same thing. You can't cut them with one kind of knife and then use them with the other one. If you did, Tosfos says, then you need you don't need shishim keneged the whole vegetable. All you need is shishim keneged what it absorbed from the knife, which means basically you'd figure out the size of the knife and therefore figure on that basis whether you have shishim. Tosfos goes on to say, if you use a treifa knife to cut it, that's different. Then the whole vegetable becomes nevela, chatish nas nevela. According to Rabbeinu Ephraim, not because he holds that applies only to midar rice, only to basal cholov, but according to everybody else who holds that midar rice, it applies to everything, and that Amal says that's how we hold. So then in that case, so that and this is why, by the way, when you're in the sometimes you have it that sometimes you'll find first of all you'll find in the grocery stores many times they have vegetables that are sold pre-cut. And you don't know what kind of knife they use. Or sometimes you have when you're on a boat or something, and they have refreshments or whatever. You got to be careful about that because depending if they didn't use a clean knife for it, they use a tray for knife. Who's supposed to taste it? Again, you can't have a yid taste it. What if there's issue in it? And we're not knowing nowadays to rely on a good. So if the fact of the matter is, sometimes you have many times in those kinds of situations, they do have knives that are set aside specifically for cutting vegetables. So then maybe there's a little more reason to be mako. Although even then you have the issue again. You can have nas bar nas because they're washed together. They're washed together with the various other treifa dishes. And we said before, nas bar nas doesn't work when the original taste is issue. So you may still have a problem then.
Does it also apply to pilpil?
Pepper would be a sharp vegetable, sure. Okay. All right. Continues the Gemara. Kilchi de lifta shari. What about if you use this knife to cut pieces of kilchi means I mean stalks of lifta of turnip. No, kilchi means stalks of turnip, which is also not sharp. So therefore, that's why we say kilchi. That's what we're talking about, the stalks of it, meaning leaves.
Oh, the
there's some people, these turnip leaves, whatever. So those, shori, those would be mutter, if you cut them with a fleshic knife, to eat them together with milk. The silka asiri, on the other hand, beet leaves would be also, because those are sharp and it gives it a flavor. The posach for who delifta, but if you went back and forth, so while you're cutting them, you cut one turnip and one beet, and you keep on going back and forth, and then that helps. That takes away the fattiness from the knife, and therefore the beet greens or whatever are not going to get a flavor of flesh from the knife, because each time before then you cut a turnip, and that takes away the flavor temporarily. So therefore you go.
If the knife had vinegar on it and touched meat, can you use it for rikusa?
I don't know. Vinegar is sharp stuff, so maybe. Tosfos, by the way, points out one more thing, which is that now, like this, we're talking about the whole. The obvious case we're talking about over here is if the knife is ben yoimot. What if the knife is not ben yoimot? Normally, we would say, okay, it's nose and palm with gum, it's not a problem. However, in this case, when we're talking about sharp vegetables, you have a Gemara in Avodah Zarah that talks about chiltis, which is an extremely sharp herb, that has the capability of taking even the town with gum and turning it back into an edible town again. So the question is, does that apply to these other sharp vegetables that we're talking about over here? If you were to take a non-ganyoma knife and cut sharp vegetables with it, would those vegetables be able to be eaten with milk or not?
A non-benyama knife.
Meaning that it wasn't used, and last it was last used more than 24 hours ago.
Wow.
Okay. Another din. Ba'omineh Rav Dimi mir Rav Nachman. Rav Dimi asked Rav Nachman a question as follows. Mahu la'anuchi kadet milcha gabi kadet kamcha. Would you be allowed to put a jug of salt next to a jug of kamcha? Kamcha is another name for kutach. The question is, according to Rashi and most of the Rishonim, the question is, do we have to be concerned that some of the kutach may end up getting into the salt? Like, for example, in particular, we're talking about where both of them are uncovered. So, like, especially, for example, you may take a ladle of kutach and some of it may drip into the salt, and you don't realize, and later on you're going to use that salt with meat. So are you allowed to do that? According to the Rambam, the question is the salt going to absorb, because salt tends to absorb things, is it going to absorb some of the kutach into it, and therefore, again, you're going to use it with flesh. So you're allowed to do that. Amalei Osir. So Rav Nachman says yes. In fact, it would be also to do that.
To use it with kutach.
Not to use it with kutach. To put the kutach. To put the kutach next to the salt in the cupboard or in the fridge or something. We don't even know how much. The point is because some of the kutach may get some of the kamcha kutach, whatever, two names for the same thing, may get into the salt, and then you're gonna not realize and eat it with flesh.
You're talking about salt that they use.
Salt they use for everything. They use it for all their food. They use it for kashering, but they also use it for food and everything. So Tosfos says, if you have, let's say for example, you're talking about milk and meat to put them next to each other in the cupboard, that's fine because you know they're also, and you're gonna be careful not to allow a little bit of it from one to fall into the other one. For the same reason also, you can have, let's say, tray for food of a goy cooking next to food of a yid, as long as you make sure that, well, exactly, salt you're not going to realize, it's not going to occur to you that some kotach may have gotten into it. Right. Okay. So we asked him, the chalamai, what about, by the same token, would you be allowed to put the kotach next to a jar of vinegar? Do you have the same problem that some of the kotach may get into the vinegar, and then you'll end up using it for the flesh? Okay, you're asking about vinegar on a knife.
No, yeah.
Okay, fine. Amalei Shori, and Rav Nachman tells him that would be mutter.
So vinegar next to
kotach is mutter, but salt next to kotach is not. So yeah, and again, if they're covered, then there's no issue. Right. So the question is, according to the Rambam, there still might be a problem because the salt may still absorb from the kotach. But according to everybody else, the problem is, okay, they're next to each other. So the Rambam learns that the salt may absorb through the sides of the thing or whatever may absorb some of the kotach. According to everybody else, the issue is that some kotach may drip into the salt, then if they're covered, there's no issue. So anyway, the point is he's telling him that it's mutter with kotach next to vinegar, but it's also with kotach next to salt. Now, vinegar and salt can both be used as fleshik. So what's the difference? Amalei, so he asked him, Amai Shna. So Rav Dini asked Rav Nachman, what's the difference? And the answer is, and Rav Nachman answers him, L'chitechol Allah kura de milcha. When you measure out for it for me a kura of salt. So what does that mean? Rashi over here explains that it means like Rav Nachman is saying, like in a little bit of a jokey way, he's saying if you measure out for me a kur of salt, then as a reward for that, as payment for that, I'll tell you the difference. Earlier in our Masechta, you have that same expression also on Dr. Bay's. You have that same expression, and Rashi over there translates it similarly, that it means if you measure, similar idea, Rashi says, if you measure out a core of salt in payment for me telling you, and Rashi over there clearly says, b'chus abalmo, he's saying there's a bit of a joke. In other places, Rashi explains, in other
Makoshim. Why would you talk about a reasonable question?
No, in other words, he's saying, like, if you think about it, so that's, there's other answers, there's other explanations, including also that it means that teichol can also mean if you eat, so it means, like, so to speak, if you eat a quart of salt, either he means even if you eat a quart of salt, you're never going to figure out the reason unless you apply yourself, or he means, like, as an exaggeration, eventually, maybe after you eat a quart of salt, you'll figure out the reason. Whatever it is, the point is, he's saying the reason is actually fairly obvious. My timer, what's the actual reason? Hi isa isura be'ene, v'hai lesa isura be'ene, because the difference is, when kutach falls into salt, the kutach is not bottled in the salt, it's thick. Therefore, you have actual mamoshes of milk that you're going to end up eating with meat. As opposed to when kutach falls into, some kutach falls into the vinegar, fine, you don't really have it be'ein. It's not visible in there because it's liquid. And it doesn't really give a flavor either because the vinegar is sharp stuff. The kutach doesn't give it a flavor. Therefore, you don't have a problem. Exactly. Right. Okay. All right. In another case involving things absorbing flavors, Kahu Bagoizla, there was this young pigeon that had been cooked or roasted or whatever, the Nafal Akad de Kamsa, which fell into a jar of kutach.
Oh, you say it was cooked and roasted?
Because that's what we're going to discuss in a second. That's what we're going to talk about, whether it's cooked, whether it's roasted, whether it's salted. That's what we have to figure out what the case is. So like this. It fell into a jar of kamcha, right? Shayer of Chinana bred Ravim Pashrunya. So Rav Chinana, the son of Ravim Pashrunya, said that it's mutter. Paskin that it's mutter. Omar Rava, so Rava said, very good. Man chakim mishri ki hai gavna. Who else would be smart enough, would be knowledgeable enough in Torah to be makir in such a case? Ilav Rav Chinana bred Ravim Pashrunya. If not for, it takes the Rav Chinana bred Ravim Pashrunya to be makir in such a case.
Where's Pashrunya?
It's someplace in Babel, I don't know. What? So why was he master it? What were the grounds? Kasava, because he holds. Ki oma shmuel maliyah hareyu kareseya. When did Shmuel say that when something is salted, it's considered like it's boiling, which we said before in the sugya, that would be hanimili hecha de'enyo necho machmas milchoy. That's where it's salted so heavily that you can't eat it with the amount of salt on it. One second. Kutchach does contain salt. The Gemara tells us in Pesachim it's made up of sour milk, bread, moldy breadcrumbs, and salt. And in fact, the Gemara says it's really not very good for you, but nevertheless, they ate it all the time in Babel. So yes, kutchach has salt in it. However, it's still edible with the salt. So therefore, that's not considered heavily salted enough to be usur, for it to be a problem. Okay, this, when does Shmuel say Maliyah? Because like this, the pigeon fell into the kamcha. Now the problem is the kamcha has salt in it. So would that make the pigeon usur? So the answer is, Rav Chinuna is saying that no, it won't because it's not salted enough. With that said, that Amal says, we're really not bucky nowadays to know what's considered too salted and what's not, especially because you have Rishonim who look, you have a number of different opinions among Rishonim, how salted does it have to be? Does it mean salted enough? Tosfos discusses it over here among others. Does it mean salted enough like you salt regular meat for kashering? Or does it mean maybe the amount of salting that you do when you're going to be roasting a piece of meat? When again, we said before that the minig is based on some Rishonim rule that you have to do that, you have to salt it a little bit. So maybe that little bit of salting is enough for it to be considered ein necho machmas milchoy.
It depends on the type of salt
that you use. That may be also, but the point is that Amal says therefore we should be machmir. But anyway,
that's how we hold.
Is that yes? So therefore, so this kutach hare necho machmas milchoy, you can eat it with the salt in it. So therefore, it's not salty enough to after the bird. However. What do you mean, the story of Rashi? Which story? I'm not sure what you're talking about. This is the case we're talking about over here in the Gemara. Yeah, I go to the Nopal Akada. However, Vahani Mili Chai, now that would only apply if the pigeon was not live. Live is nothing to talk about. No, Chai means raw. Avotsli, but if it was roasted, then it absorbs a certain amount. And therefore, boy clipper. Therefore, you have to take off a peel. Therefore, you have to take off a peel of it because to the extent of a peel will have absorbed a peel. Today, clipper means that I think the Rishonim say, and it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, that today clipper is a peel that's enough to be able to like stand on its own. Before we mentioned grira at the top of the omud, which is like even less than that, you just scrape off a surface layer. Clipper is a little more than that. Clippers, you have to do and then you have even more than that today. Natilla, which is like 2 or 3 S-boys thick. But that's here we're not talking about that right now.
How long is it?
No, but Pashtus Nath, especially, and actually one thing that the Rishonim point out is if the kamcha is cold, which usually it is, then in that case you have a concept that the Gemara talks about in Pesachim called Tatar Gavar. The lower thing overpowers the higher one, and therefore the cold kamcha overpowers the hot roasted bird that fell in there. Therefore, it still asks it today clipper because it does absorb to that extent before it has a chance to cool down, but not beyond that because by that point already it cools off. The e-ispe pili, and one more thing though, if this bird has cracks in it. So then, no good. Kule cracks or holes or whatever. Then kule also. Then the whole thing will be also because then you can't do kude klipa anymore because it absorbs through the holes. So therefore, everything is. So therefore, the whole thing is going to be also. And also the metabol b'tavlin kule also. Also, if the pigeon was spiced, was seasoned with spices, then again, also as we said the other day, the spices soften it. Therefore, it absorbs more easily. But now it's not just kude klipa anymore. So therefore it absorbs a lot more. What? Right, it absorbs a lot more. It absorbs more of the kutach. Right. Okay. I think we'll stop over here, and then we're going to continue tomorrow morning, best of the Shem, and we're going to talk more about this matter of liquids that come out of meat while it's being roasted. When are they also, and when are they mostly?
We talked about it briefly before
in connection with liver. Now we're going to talk about it more generally in connection with meat. We said before that if you put a bowl underneath it, when there's liver roasting there, then you have a problem because
tomorrow
the blood from
the permits could be at night.
Okay. We said before that if you have liver roasting over there, then you have a problem because the blood from the liver. Guys, one second. Let me just finish up summarizing over here. We said before if you have put a bowl underneath it to catch the dripping, that if there's liver over there, you have a problem because the blood from the liver is thick, and therefore it gets mixed up with the fat. Now we have to go back to talk about more generally when you're roasting meat, what liquids that come out of it are mutter and what are not. That's going to be the subject of the next piece of Gemara. Okay.